the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
The world's greatest podcast is back. It's been a while since the three of us, Chris Cotter, Seth Greenberg, and Dan Dokic, were all on at the same time. We are back, and we've got some interesting stuff going on. First and foremost, the news of the day, and really the news of the week in college basketball, was that Michigan State, a team that had been just hitting on all cylinders until the until they really got rocked last week at Mackey against Purdue. Now they get another rocking when they lose Josh Langford, one of their wingmen, for the entire year. He's been out for 8 games, and it was feared that maybe it would be a long-term thing. Well, it is going to be a long-term thing, and Tom Izzo made the announcement yesterday. And, Dan, I'll start with you. It obviously changes Michigan State moving forward, but this is a team that's won and won impressively with a lot of guys out all year, so I don't know how much it really changes them, does it?
I don't know. I think it changes them nationally. I think it changes their opportunity to win a national championship. I always say it's really hard to get to the Final Four. Izzo's made it look early, Chris. But when you're talking about 16 tonight, mature kid, they have played well without him, but Arns is hurt as well. He's got a back issue that he's been dealing with. McQuaid has been out, but they've righted the ship. But I look, and we're going to talk to Tom later on today, but I think when you're Tom Izzo, three things are involved. You want to win the Big Ten. You want to win the Big Ten tournament as well. You want to get to the Final Four. You want to win a national championship, and losing a guy like that slows the latter down. Now, they can win the cup. They can win the former, but I don't know that they can get involved in the latter. Ultimately, Seth Greenberg.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I can, you know, to play the 20-game league schedule, I think this team has the potential to get worn down without Langford, with Arns being out some. Look, they're good because Cassius Winston is as good as any point guard in the country. Nick Ward is playing at a high level. And, you know, I'm a big Aaron Henry guy. But yeah, you can't lose guys that score 15 points a game and are juniors that can guard and be the same team you are. That's just the way it is. They've developed some depth and that's great. And he'll get them to play hard and they'll compete and they'll win games. But, you know, when you're competing for a national championship, there's such a small margin of error. I think it's going to be really hard for them. I think they'll get through the Big Ten. But after that, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens.
You know, we're going to talk to Tom Izzo a little bit later on in the podcast. Seth, does this loss now change? I know we're going to talk about conference tiers a little bit later on, and obviously Michigan State is still among the top-tier teams in the Big Ten. But from a national standpoint, does that knock them down a peg? If you had to tell me, look, these are the teams that I think are Final Four teams today, does that take Michigan State out of that grouping?
No, yeah, I think they could be a Final Four team for the only reason they just played the last 7 games. They've only lost once. At Purdue, which I think, by the way, the more I watch games at Purdue, and Dan, you can speak up, that is an incredible environment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mackey Arena, that place is crazy. Like, watching that game the other day, that place was at a frenzy for 2 hours. Like, there can't be a better environment than a much better environment in the Big Ten than Mackey Arena.
I don't think there's much better in the country. And I've always said this. I don't get – you go to Purdue, you're playing a national schedule, guys get better. I mean, Glenn Robinson, going back, way before Glenn Robinson, actually, guys get better. You play in a crazy environment, and yet Matt has a hard time recruiting. It's amazing. It is – to me, there are certain afternoons in the Big Ten where you're just not going to win. Some night, it used to be IU. That's not the case anymore. But I always said, some nights at Assembly Hall, you are not coming in there and winning. Some nights in Breslin, you are not coming in there and winning. And some nights in Mackey, you are not coming in there and winning. And I think the loss that Michigan State felt at Purdue is just a move on to the next game, figure ourselves out, loss, nothing more. Nothing more. It's a tough place.
Yeah. That environment, it was almost mesmerizing watching the game. I mean, those people were absolutely insane.
Seth, it's the only place I know where when you walk out of the gym, there's only one tunnel, there's a big sign with a clock above the clock, time to play hard. It's the only place I know where the students have a scoreboard for, quote, hard plays, meaning they flip it over. How many charges? how many steals, how many, they give you dunks, they flip it over. and it says play hard, lives here or something. And it's the only place I've ever been to that has, you know, most people get all excited when somebody hits a three. If, you know, the different IU, Romeo Langford shoots one, you know, shoots an air ball, everybody goes, oh, that's so great. No, not at Purdue. You got to take a charge to get any respect here. It's awesome.
And that team plays up to that. Boy,
they always do.
They always play better. Yeah. You think, boy, they're just going to be Carson Edwards this year, and they got a couple other nice pieces, but they seem to play better and better because of that home crowd. They really feed off of it.
Always
Matt
have.
Painter's the most underappreciated coach in America.
Oh, really?
Around here, Seth. I'm going to tell you right now, Seth, if they don't get to the Sweet 16, now you're not maybe going to see it, but around here, you're going to. I had a person call me the other day, a lady that played basketball at Purdue. Said, yeah, Dan, you're talking up Purdue on my radio show. Yeah, I am. Okay. Well, Painter always slows it down in the tournament, and he always gets us beat in the tournament. I'm thinking, okay, name the time where your coach always did this. And of course, they couldn't. But I'm telling you, it's the weirdest thing. Purdue, be careful what you wish for, man, because that dude is as good as there is in the country.
They were a good offense, man.
Yeah.
I mean, their actions are ridiculous. Pin down to dribble handoffs to card roll. I mean, you talk about teams that roll hard, screen hard, cut hard, flying off stagger screens. I mean, and what he's done with Carson Edwards this year.
That started at Michigan State. Year,
he was a pig. Carson Edwards.
No, he wasn't.
That dude, he's inclusive now. Do you agree?
And that all started a couple weeks ago at Michigan State. Painter took him out. And, you know, when you do a game, you see it sitting right across. You just saw it, man. At the end of the day, you got to make a choice with a great player. If he's killing you, you're going to lose anyway. You might as well coach him your way, right? And they did it. And then the Williams kid played well at the end of the Michigan State game. It was the only thing they took out of that game. And next thing you know, he's in the starting lineup. Harms is coming off the bench, much more comfortable. I talked to Matt the other day about it. And now you got a team that, hey, they're only one game out of the Michigan schools, and they're rolling.
Absolutely rolling. So the bottom line is this with the Big Ten. Michigan State loses at Purdue. No shame in that.
Nope.
So they're still near the top. Michigan obviously is humming along. These teams at the top of the Big Ten are kind of getting a ding here and a ding there, but then it seems like they just reload the next week. And Michigan State now, they get bad news midweek without Langford, but they get a whole week to prepare for Indiana, who is just terrible. Dockage, what is going on? I mean, now they're not just losing games, but they're losing.
Why do you have to say that?
They're losing games to Rutgers, and they can't score points. This team can't even get to 60 points now.
22 to zip. What's
Take
that?
Let him vent.
No, I'm not. I vent it. It's available on YouTube. It's available everywhere. Look, this is a team that the one thing they have is ability. I mean, they got a fourth year senior who's going to average, I don't know, 15 for his career. They got a top five pick. They got a guard that everybody says in Indiana they stole from Purdue who's really good. They got some wings that are experienced. Look, the bottom line is they don't like each other. Whatever the reason is, and Seth was so good last week, I think, talking either on my show or here. Man, when you get a one and done, you better surround him with other one and dones. And Indiana looks completely, well, disorganized, disinterested, unathletic in every spot, including the kid who's supposed to be a top five pick, and can't shoot and doesn't like each other. It's a bad mix. It's really Georgia Techian over the years.
Get out of my face with that. Now, can it be fixed right away? Because Michigan State's coming in hungry angry.
You can't fix something like that. When you have guys that don't like each other and don't play for each other,
it's over.
You can have all the team meetings you want. But, you know, those team meetings don't resolve anything. And it goes back to the Ben Simmons philosophy. You got a guy that's a one and done. And his team is almost playing against him because they're tired of hearing about it. And if you have one and done, your team is done because you don't have everyone on the same page because the one guy who's the one and done has a different set of rules in a lot of ways than everyone else. It happened with Markelle Fultz. It happened with Ben Simmons. And now you've seen it happen with Romeo Langford. I mean, that's just the way it is. And I would have never thought I'd see an Archie Miller team this uninspired, unorganized, non-competitive. I just think the funniest thing is that, you know, people killed Crean. Like, let's face it, Crean would still be coaching there if OG Anunoby and Hartman were healthy the year he got fired.
Mm-hmm.
because they would have been an Elite Eight team. Don't you agree with that?
100%. I mean, look, hey, Seth, OG Anunoby went from hurt to less than a year later, he's guarding LeBron James in the Eastern Conference Finals as a starter for Toronto. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I know you guys want to get into a few things today. Game Day is going to be there, East Lansing, this weekend. Indiana's in town. Not exactly the kind of road trip that Indiana and Archie Miller need to turn things around, but it may be exactly the game that Coach Izzo needs after finding out that Josh Langford is gone for the year, kind of get things back on track. And as I said, they got a week to prepare for that. But some of the things we have seen this week, Michigan State not in action, but we've seen LSU in action, some of these other teams in other conferences. And Seth, I know you wanted to talk about LSU because in the SEC, and for good reason, we talk about Tennessee and we talk about Kentucky because Kentucky's playing better basketball of late too. But one team that we really haven't talked much about at all is LSU, and they're unbeaten in league play.
LSU is money. There's no doubt about it. They are money. I mean, they are really, really good. Look, you got an experienced backer. Tremont Waters is as good as any point guard in the country right now. I mean, he's explosive. He's quick. He can pass the ball. He defends. He's an active defender off the ball. He creates turnovers. He makes big shots. Skylar Mays is a mature shot maker with a little bit of grizzle and toughness. They've got all kinds of athletes around those two guys. Nas Reed, the freshman, McDonald's All-American, is a big kid who can step out and shoot threes. Emmett Williams, rebounds. They're undefeated in league play. They turn it over some, but they're a team that in just pure talent, this is going to be sacrilegious, they might have the most pure talent of any team in the SEC.
Hey, Seth, did you think at some point, you know, the whole Trae Young factor? You know what I mean? Or you know, you become Seth Curry. I thought, when I thought about LSU, I wonder if Waters is going to become a pig. You were talking about Carson Edwards, where he just shoots it all. A pig is not a derogatory name. It's a name for college basketball people that shoot too much, handle the ball too much, and are pigs. So there you go. Did you think he was going to become, was there a threat there for that? But he hasn't really.
No, he hasn't. I think the guy realized if he wants to win, they're going to have good players. And those good players make the game easier for them. I mean, this team is – they got, you know, the kid Bigsby Williams, he's a transfer from Oregon. He's got experience. Nas Reed's a kid that has no clue how to play. 6'11 guy that wants to shoot threes. But he's talented. Mays and Waters can really, really play. And they got these young kids. Javante Smart can really guard. This kid, Emma Williams, only does his rebound. Now, look. They're not efficient offensively, but they can rebound misses, and they're athletic, and they've got talent. And you know, you're right. We don't even mention them because they didn't have a great preseason, but they are a very good, athletic, talented team that, you know, is basically just steamrolling the league. Now, look, it's going to get more difficult. But they're playing at a really, really high level.
Well, Dockage, if you had to tier them as far as we're looking at some of these tiers for some of these conferences, Tennessee and Kentucky are clearly top tiered in the SEC. The SEC has a big midsection. I mean, the SEC's got a lot of teams that are beating each other up right now. Auburn, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, you can throw a bunch of teams in there. But is LSU in that group, or are they more of the top group? They've won 10 games in a row.
I got LSU in my top tier.
You have a top tier in the SEC. Doc, you agree with that? Are they with Kentucky?
Oh, yeah.
They're with
yeah.
Kentucky and Tennessee, same ilk.
Well, I would say this, and I'm just going to go by what they've done. I just feel like if you're talking about a tier that says they can go second weekend, third weekend in the NCAA tournament or win the SEC or both, I think, yeah, there's no question. I think that I would go this route with them. I would say LSU is a talented, organized, tough team. I would say that there's nobody better than Tennessee in terms of what they've done and their toughness, and I would take Kentucky on the come. I would say that, and Seth and I, we've talked about this off-air, on-air. You know, you get E.J. Montgomery playing, and you get Nick Richards giving them 20, 25 minutes, whatever you want to give between the two with some numbers. Now you got a team that will really take off, although they've taken off. So, yeah, I don't – you know, again, if we're going to talk about – I don't think consistently over the course of the season, but I think in a tournament, don't be surprised about Auburn too, man. When those two guards are making shots, Harper and Brown, you got a team that can play. But I would say those three teams in the SEC have absolutely taken over, and I would say those three teams in the SEC are in the upper tier of all of college basketball right now, I would think. sets.
Hey, speaking of your boy Nick Richards, had a big game the other night.
I know. My guy, because I did say the Knicks were going to be the most improved, not the New York Knicks, but Nick Richards and Nick Ward. Nick Ward's been good. Nick Richards, you know what? Maybe he'll be the most improved in the NCAA tournament. There you go.
There's a chance. I'll tell you, you speak about Kentucky real quickly. P.J. Washington is finally playing like Cal expected him to play. And I think partially he's letting him play through his mistakes a little bit. But P.J. Washington's gone three games in a row. He's averaging 20 and 10.
You notice I paused there because I knew Seth had to get his Kentucky thing in. I knew Seth had to talk about Kentucky and Coach Cal, so I let you have your due, even though you're not feeling very well, Seth.
Hey, I'm playing hurt, Coach. I've been sick as a dog for the last 2 days.
So I want to move on with talking about tiers in these different conferences, because I think this is the time of year we move the calendar on to February and teams start to separate themselves. In the other league, I think teams are separating themselves, and Seth, you might agree, is the Big East. I mean, I think right now, I look at a team like Marquette, and they win tough games. I mean, they win games when they're losing. They win games when it seems like they're on the road and it's not going to happen, and yet they find a way to win, like they did last weekend. And even though last night they blew out Butler at Hinkle, it just seems like they find ways to win games.
I think Nova and Marquette are in the top tier of the Big East. Here's my way I tier the Big East. I got Nova, Marquette, the top tier. St. John's, Seton Hall, in tier two. And then tier three, I got Providence, Creighton, and Georgetown. And then the bottom, I got Xavier, DePaul, and Butler, which it's weird to say the Butler's in the bottom tier, but something's not right with that team right now. They're just not playing well. They were playing pretty well early in the season. The problem the Big East has is in league play, you only have two teams with winning records.
Yeah, because St. John's got off to such a hot start, and then they really cooled down. And you talk about Villanova is playing great basketball now, and then Marquette, but doesn't there seem to be a big drop-off after those two teams?
Night when I watched St. John, I thought St. John's last night, they went out to Omaha, and I thought, all right, Creighton's going to have 20,000, you know. Man, they beat the hell out of them. And I'm watching them, and I'm thinking two things. I'm thinking, number one, these are some dudes that can get to the rim, and number two, they're guarding. But they're only 4 and 5 in the league. And you know, you're right. And I watched Butler. Eventually all things must end. And it looked last night or last few nights that the Butler way is sliding away because they don't look talented enough. They don't look like they're anything different anymore. They just look like another basketball team struggling to play basketball in a tough conference. That's all. That's really, you know, all that kind of looks like. But to me, when you got one team at 8-0 and you got another team at 8-1, and I watched Marquette beat Butler last night, That's a different Marquette team than I watched come into Assembly Hall and get blasted. They look different to me.
They're guarding now.
Yeah, that's it, huh?
I think they're guarding better, and I think that the development of Sam Hauser and Joey Hauser gives them another option. You know, Sam Hauser can really score. That dude is good. But I think they have more physicality defensively. I just think that they're. They can bang on you a little bit. They can guard you a little bit. They can rebound a little bit better. And I'll tell you the thing that impresses me about this team. Tell me if I'm way off. Like, we know Howard's a great player, all right? And we know at any moment he can just get it going and drop 50. And yet his teammates enjoy watching him. Like, they are all in on him doing what he's doing. And that's rare because, you know, a lot of times you get a guy like that and the dudes play, you know, work against him. But that team, like when he's going off and doing his thing, those kids are into it. I mean, like they're hugging and high-fiving and chest-bumping and doing everything else. But they got more guys that can score. Like Joey Hauser is going to be a really good player. Sam Hauser can really, really score. He's got enough guys coming off the bench that gives them a little bit of maturity. They've got a maturity to them that they didn't have a year ago. That's the way I look at them.
So I watched that last night, and it was stark. It struck me. He was making moves at the top of the key, finishing with his right. I mean, and their bench and their other guys. And then it also struck me. Again, I'm going to use the word, you know, offensive pig. I mean, he shared. It's not like when guys get it, they feel like they have to do something because they're not going to get it back playing with him. It's weird because this is a dude that scored 50, 40 and a half. It's a weird thing to watch because it's a cool thing to watch because this is not man, I'm resentful. This is not, man, I don't get any touches. You said it. The Housers are really good, and they're involved just as much as Howard is. Howard just happens a lot of times to get the ball and go score. It's weird. It's great. It's fun to watch.
I don't remember what game it was, but it was a few weeks back. They went into overtime, and Howard scored the first 8 points, I think, in the overtime session. And that was sort of one of those games where the rest of his team said, okay, it's your time.
Yeah.
We got into overtime. Now it's your time to do your thing. And I think that, to your point, they just sort of marveled at the way this kid was taking over a game when everybody knew he was going to, and he did anyways.
Yeah.
And but they enjoy it.
Yeah, right. Right. They dig it. Yeah. It's great. It's cool. It's very, very cool. Very cool.
So what about the ACC then? We talk about the Big East, and I think we probably come into an agreement that those two teams look like maybe the only teams out of the Big East that are going to be second weekend teams in the NCAA tournament. Maybe you get another one like a St. John's if they come to play that can get it done. But what about the ACC? Because I think you're looking at a lot of teams in the ACC that have a chance to make that next step. But how do you tier that out, Seth?
I got Duke and Virginia's top tier, and I keep Virginia in that thing. And then my second tier is Carolina, Virginia Tech, who can really score, and Louisville. And then my third tier is Cuse, State, FSU. And then, you know, after that, it's, you know, I threw Georgia Tech in there at tier four because I wanted to make sure.
Everybody's in that tier four then, because the top three tiers in the ACC, those are your NCAA tournament teams. Because if you got Georgia, because exactly. You got Georgia Tech and Boston College and Pitt and those others that are just fighting for scraps right now in that league.
And the bottom, you know, the last tier, Notre Dame, Miami, and Wake. I mean, those are bad ACC teams.
You know, Seth, one of the interesting things for me was going to Florida State and doing a game, and they're 15-5. They sometimes make shots, sometimes they don't. But I swear to God, it was an odd thing. It's like, man. If they, and this is weird, usually it's if you can guard on the ball, you're going to be really good defensively. When they get into passing lanes, they stymie you, and it almost doesn't matter how well they shoot because they're going to stir it up and get enough transition. But I will say this. I know they're not Duke. I know they're not UVA. I mean, you can almost say I know they're not Louisville or North Carolina or Virginia Tech, but I would be very, very nervous playing Florida State if I were a coach that needed to make a run in the NCAA tournament and they showed up, you know, right there, because that's a team that can play.
What about NC State, too? Wouldn't you throw them in sort of a similar category?
They don't have the depth up front.
Like, one thing about NC State, I love the way they play. I thought Kevin Keats did a great job keeping his team engaged in the Virginia game. I just don't know if they have the depth up front. You know, NC State, they just, you know, they don't really put a lot of pressure on you with any front court plays. I'll tell you about Florida State. Tell me if I'm wrong here. He plays 1,000 guys.
Yes, he does. Yes.
Like
10, like minimum.
I would love for him to get to 9 guys, 8 guys, and see that it could really develop the chemistry offensively.
I would.
I know that's not great coaches.
I tell you what, I felt like, you know, sometimes you hear coaches all the time talk about we're wearing players out now. If it's a strategy to keep you fresh and go through the tournament, that's cool. But man, it's hard to keep track of why you take a guy out or why, you know, those assistants got to be making their money because they're seeing things to get a guy out or get a guy in. But you know what? The guy, Leonard Hamilton, is the world's youngest human being. He's 70 years old. He looks like he's 25. Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. All he does is hang out with his family.
He's like Willie Nelson, but in reverse.
Yes.
Willie Nelson looked like he was 75 when he was 35. And Leonard Hamilton is the opposite of that.
There's no doubt. And it's fun to watch his team, and it's fun to watch him because he don't say nothing. He just coaches ball. And I tell you this, man, if you better have some guys that don't turn it over if you're gonna beat them. I'll give you, Seth, I swear to God, two teams in college basketball, I've heard this so much. And I've said this, and I'm going to add Michigan to it. Michigan and Virginia, when they beat you, every guy that I've talked to, and this hasn't been asked, it's like, well, we really should have beat them. Like when you play Virginia, everybody, we're just as good as them. Or you play Michigan, we're just as good as them. Sometimes you get blown out and you're not. But Virginia to me is the interesting one. I swear I can see them getting beat early. I swear I can see them not losing to UMBC or whatever it was, but man, I watched them and I'm like, how do you guys not beat these guys? How do you not beat them? What the hell are you doing? Now,
I tell you why, because they don't turn it over.
I know, fast break, and they don't foul.
They don't foul. They You know, I mean, they keep you off the glass. Now, I tell you what, watching them in the NC State game the other day, that was the first time I watched them this year. Because I think when they put it on Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. I'm going like, this team's going to win this championship. I mean, they're flying up and down. They're knocking down shots. I mean, they're cutting hard. I mean, they were locked in. They looked like UMBC against NC State. I mean, they were having a hard time getting free. And I can see that, except, look, you know, the whole thing, the system can't, you can, I don't care what system you run. If you know, if you can impose your will on the thing, you're going to win. The people say you can't win a championship playing that way. I disagree, except maybe this year. To beat the Dukes and some other people, you're going to probably have to score 80.
Well, and they can make shots. I think that's sort of the formula right now. Duke isn't making shots.
Duke isn't making shots. Dukes, how about R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson? They have 15 and 17 threes. Old-fashioned three-point plays apiece. 15 and 17. Like, those guys are shooting. It's a joke what they're shooting from the three-point line. Yeah. Everyone, like, they were 2 for 21 from the three-point line the other day.
Yeah, against Tech, because Tech just packed it in.
Yeah, and they were 9 for 43 against Syracuse.
Right. They're going to have to make shots, and Virginia's making shots, and they're scoring points. It's a good formula.
They scored 80 points 6 times this year.
Yeah, I know. I'm just like, I can see
that. As Seth always says, it's not your father's Virginia. It's a different team this year.
That's what everybody says. I've seen them. I don't know. Okay. All right.
Hey, when we come back, we're going to take a quick break on the podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk to Tom Izzo. Team suffered an injury setback this week, also coming off the loss at Purdue, but they've got time to prepare for Indiana on Saturday. And we're going to make some picks, too, so don't go anywhere. Joined now by Michigan State coach Tom Izzo. And coach, tough break yesterday with Joshua Langford and the injury. I'm sure you'd been kind of dreading that moment when you have to make the announcement, but now you lose him for the rest of the year. How do you move on as a team now? Because that's what you've got to do. There's no, rest for the weary at this point in time. No one's going to feel sorry for you, are they?
No, most people will be happy. I mean, it has been 7 games, and in all honesty, you start thinking it, but I did think he'd be able to come back sooner or later, and just was one of those things where, they think it's by far the best. We've had him with every specialist, and for his long term, and that's what we got to worry about. You know, it's not going to be take care of him for now. And with our football people here, we had a lot of injuries this year, and I told Antonio, he kept saying, next man up, and I always say, if the next man up was as good as the man that was there, he would have been starting. So, you know, we do got to have next man up, and that's the way it is. But, and we've had some guys that have filled in, and we've had another injury, you know, with Kyle Arnes that filled in for him. But all in all, I think we can survive it. What it does is it wears Winston and McQuaid down a little bit more, and it gives us a guy that had some, that could really shoot it, could defend, and maybe most importantly, had the experience. But, hey, other people have had injuries too, so we're just going to move forward.
Yeah, you talk about wearing cash. Now, by the way, happy birthday is.
Thanks.
Today's your birthday?
Yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday. But,
what are you, 39? Let's go.
40. 40.
You can get into bars now. Huh, baby? Hi.
Yeah. I don't think I've been in one of those in like 35 years since the social media even became a thought.
I know.
You don't go to those places.
No. Go ahead.
But, you talk about playing Cassius too many minutes. How are you going to manage not just playing, but the practice and the preparation? Because you need him 35, 36, 37 minutes a game now.
You know, and some people play guys 37, 38, but they don't run like we run, you know, and we're playing all man-to-man. So when people say, well, so-and-so does it, well, it's a different style. It's different. It has been strange. Two things happened to me here this year. You worry about injuries, the new Big Ten schedule, which means 20 games and everything's compressed compared to Danny when you played in the league, you know, when it was like Wednesday, Saturday or Thursday, Saturday, and so you're always trying to figure out, when can I get some time to work on us? And then when you do get it, you say, well, God, I got to save my guys. So this has been hard for me because I never gave a damn, if I was to tell you the truth. I mean, we would play the war game. We would get physical. We would do this. And I got to admit, I've had a change, and it kills me every day when I do it. But I've kept Cassius out of a practice. I've kept McQuaid out of half a practice. And that's un-American around here, you know. I mean, I never did that with even the stars of the stars. But it's just an adjustment. It's adjustment because of the schedule. It's adjustment because of the injuries. And it's adjustment because of the times. We're not as tough as maybe when you guys played. I don't think anybody is anymore.
Well, I know I wasn't tough. I know that I was never kept out of a practice. In fact, when Alford was kept out, it was like, Dockage, you know, you got to practice twice for Alford. You know what I mean? So I coach, but having said that, when you look at your team and you have played without Cassius Winston, you have played without McQuaid, you are playing without Arns, where is your team? What do you think of your team?
God, you know, Dan, I say that to my staff. I mean, I didn't think we played very well against Purdue, but as you know, Purdue is a good team, and they've been a better team starting Williams. They've got a presence in there now, and I think Edwards has done a great job of taking 25 shots a game to more like 15, 16. He's become a better passer. They're a better team, too, but we did that. We got down. And even, you know, when you should have been tired, we made a hell of a run, and it wasn't just a lucky run. We kind of grounded out, and I think we're a really good team. I really do. I think we got an inside presence. I think we've got some bigs to defend. I think we got a great rotation inside because we got two beasts in Xavier and of course, Ward. But then we got a guy in Kenny Goins who can – he can guard a point guard or he could guard a center, you know, and that's a nice guy to have in this day and age where you got a lot of those stretch fours or more athletic fours. And, you know, our problem is a little bit is the inexperience at the perimeter. And, you know, we got two really good ones. If Arns comes back some, that helps us. If not, Aaron Henry has played pretty good, just doesn't shoot it as well. So then they can do different things with Cassius, different things with Nick inside because – for a while there, we were shooting 40-some percent from the three, and Josh was a big part of that, and Kyle was a big part of that. So that's where it changes a little bit, but, hey, I got to earn my money and find different ways to score sometimes.
And Tom, how difficult – you talked about the 20-game league schedule. Like, you're only halfway through your league schedule right now. You have 10 league games left. Is that a different approach? I mean, like, you know, I remember when I was in the ACC, they were voting on that. I think they're going for that next year, but – like, how exhausting is having that, having champions, having an exempt event?
Well, Dan played in the league, Seth, and it's different as a player. But when you're at 14 games or 16 games, I think it was 16 when I started, and we went to 18. And, my God, it just seemed like two extra conference games was like four decent regular season games, you know? Because everybody knows each other so much, the intensity, the fact that you're going to play in a packed place usually – I think the two extra games is enormous. Now we put two more on top of that and try to sandwich them in. And I do think it makes for better games, but I think we're all trying to learn how to handle that. And that's been a little difficult with practices and everything, at least for me. It's been, you know, I got to change. I've been in the league so long that I think I've been here since it was 14 or 16 games, and it was 18, now it's 20. And I bet you when you voted on that, I'll bet you all the coaches voted 12-0 not to do it, right? I mean, that sort of wasn't our league, but I think for the most part, you know, the people, and I give Jim credit. I mean, it's better for TV. It's better for what we're doing. And I do think it's good to have the rivalries. I mean, it's crazy that Michigan State only played once or Purdue and Indiana only played once. But it is different, guys. And Dan, what do you think on that? I mean, you've played in it, and conference games are a lot more taxing. I mean, you could go play Duke and Carolina, and as crazy as it sounds, it's not as taxing as two conference games sometimes.
Coach, I think this. I've said this forever. We see and we say, well, pros play 82 games, and well they don't go to class every day. They don't get up at 8 o'clock in the morning. Okay, the games, though, I can't tell you how many times – having a son, it's different now than when I played, Coach. The demands. I can't tell you how many times I went to a Michigan game, and either Mo or Duncan or Derek Walton or whomever, I would drive them back to the dorm after a game, and they had a study. And it was like, man, I, I got an exam at 8 a.m. People, that's tough.
They don't realize that. We go to Purdue and we play at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I said, God, we had just come from Iowa, got in at 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
And I said, we go to Purdue, and I said, oh, good, I'll get home in time to have supper with my family and actually live. We get to the airport, and I think them astronauts at Purdue sabotaged our plane.
Yeah, they did.
We couldn't start the plane. So we sat there for an hour, and then we bus back 5 hours, and we got home at 10:30 at night anyway on a bus the whole time, you know, with a couple guys sick and everybody. I mean, there are so many things. You had the era when you played, and then you got to kind of see the era where your son played, and now you're seeing a little bit of the era when he coached. And I bet you he has a different perspective as a coach and as a player, too.
Oh, God, Coach. Coach, would you agree with this? Coach Knight always used to say a player should come into Division I college basketball, coach for a year as a redshirt year, and then play, and they'd have a totally different perspective on the whole thing, right?
Josh Langford, guys. Josh Langford, you know, he's the first couple games he was out of his, you know, he was doing his normal stuff. But then when he realized he's going to be out for a little longer, he started trying to take on it. He's an unbelievable kid. And he says, Coach, I got to have a purpose. And I said, okay, you got all the out-of-bounds plays underneath the basket. You got to make sure our guys are down, our guys are ready, both offensively and defensively. So if you watch him, he actually does it on the bench. And he says to me about 2 weeks ago, he goes, man, why aren't these guys doing this? Or why aren't these guys doing that? I go, hey, here's a whistle, brother. Welcome to our world.
That's right.
And it is different. You know, he really looks at it differently. And he's living with those two freshmen that are kind of taking his spot, and Aaron Henry and Gabe Brown. And I told those guys, I said, now I told you when you got here, you should just hang with Josh. Well, now they're trying to hang with Josh 4 months later, you know, 6 months later, and realize that it's not as easy as you think. So I think Bob was right on the money on that, to be honest with you, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the easiest thing. When you look around, I know this is about you and your team, but, man, the state of Michigan, you and Michigan have dominated, Coach. I mean, you guys, the thing that frustrates me with you guys, nobody realizes that 16-2 in the freaking Big Ten, in last year's Big Ten, was unbelievable. And you've continued it this year, like 25-3 or something like that in the Big Ten. It's unbelievable. My point is the tournament run,
and so have they. And, you know, it probably, again, reminds you back in the day when it was Indiana and Purdue, you know, and I mean, there's other good teams, and I think Purdue is very good. I mean, Maryland's an interesting team, and, you know, I still think Iowa and Minnesota are pretty good teams. I mean, I think there's a lot of good teams, but, you know, everybody hits kind of a tough spot. I mean, Ohio State hit one, Indiana hits one, you know, and we've kind of been able to weather it, and I think we've got some veteran guys. I mean, that's our big thing this year. But Michigan's got some veterans, too. You know, some guys that are third, fourth-year juniors and guys that have been through the system like Simpson. And then you sprinkle in a freshman, and it's not as bad.
Yeah, but having those games backloaded, Tom, what was behind that? I mean, you guys played them, like, twice within, like, what, 14 days?
10 days or 14 days. Sure. Now, Seth, you've been a coach in most leagues. Do you think the coaches have any clue what's behind it? I mean, there's no clue. I don't have a clue. I mean, you know, I honestly, when Duke and North Carolina, I think they used to do a great job. They play at the end of the first half and at the end of the year. And those are the two best teams. The problem with the Big Ten is you don't know. I mean, you could go year in, year out, and you could predict those two teams were. And they scheduled accordingly, and there was a big buildup. I mean, now when you do it within a, 10 or 14-day period, it's a little crazy. But, you know, it's the same for them as it is us. So I don't know what the theory behind it was. They always talk about a computer makes the scheduling. I always told them that computer has terminal cancer, but they never listened to me.
Oh, boss. All right. When you look forward and you're trying to, I mean, let's be honest. I would assume you're trying to win the Big Ten, get to the Final Four, and win national championship. I mean, you're not trying to beat, you know, whatever team.
Yeah.
When you look forward, now you don't have Langford. Arns is, you know, with a back. I just talked to actually his mom and dad the other day. Where do you see the ceiling of your team?
Well, I think he presents a big problem. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. We can be as good as we can be. I mean, I'm telling you, Aaron Henry, you and I have talked about him. Mm-hmm. He is a very good player. He doesn't do the things yet in some areas. Now, in some areas, he's as good an athlete, and he's powerful. He can defend. But it's just hard to say because Kyle's a big factor. He's experienced, and he can really shoot the ball. And when you got a guy like Nick in there that people want to double, or you got a guy like Cassius that people want to maybe trap ball screens and that, then getting it to a guy that can shoot it really makes a difference. I still think we have a high ceiling. I think we were dealt a serious blow, but hell, the year we won it, we had Cleaves out for 3 months to start the season. Now we had him at the end, which is a better time to have him. This is going to be a little opposite, but I still think, you know what we've been that I've surprised me? We've been really solid defensively. We've been pretty efficient offensively. But if you look at our three-point shooting since Josh and Kyle went down, it went from 41 to about 33 or 4, you know. That's a big difference. So we just got to find different ways. Our fast break has been really, really good. But the disappointing part to me and where I think we've dropped the ball as a coaching staff, and it's because of the practices, we're rebounding. We're still leading the league. But our defensive rebounds, teams are getting 13, 15, 17 offensive rebounds against us. And that does two things. It gives them another chance to score. They're hitting some kick-out threes with the offensive rebound. And two, it gives us one less chance to run, which we are, I think when we have everybody, it's one of the best running teams I ever had. And that includes that team way back when. We can just get it up, and Cassius, even though he's not lightning quick, he has the ability to push it forward. Our wings are running, and you know, we had a pretty good system.
You think?
Yeah. You want to think. Hey, Tom, your team is really close. How did the kids handle when they found out that Josh was going to be out for the season? Because I've been around your guys, and they are really kind of a band of brothers. I mean, they look after each other, and especially.
Well, you know, when Josh came here, he lived with Tum Tum, and then those two brought in Miles, and then those two brought in Jaren Jackson, or those three, and it was like that really was an unbelievable 3 years of maybe setting the table. And you know, yesterday I found out about 11 o'clock in the morning, and we had a team meeting scheduled for 11:30, and. So I talked to Josh first, then I talked to the team, and then Josh came in and talked to the team. And as a couple of my assistants said, that was maybe the greatest speech. You know, he's a very religious kid. He's a very faithful kid. And he just talked about, you know, not worrying about him. I mean, it was tearful for all the players because he was a unanimous captain choice, which means everybody voted for him. And that happens sometimes. It doesn't happen all the time. And, you know, he's the good student, the good kid. The guy lives in this gym. I think he's got a cot down there. So it was hard because everybody knew some people like basketball. Some people love basketball. And there's a few people that live basketball. He was a guy that lived it. And the players knew that, even the ones that are good players that don't live it, just love it. And I think that's what made it hardest on them. But he handled it, guys, like a champ, and you'll see him this week, Seth. Hopefully you'll get a chance to talk to him. I mean, his demeanor and disposition on this whole thing is a hell of a lot better than mine.
Right.
That's not saying much.
I'll tell you this, an inbound.
I guess I put my foot in my mouth.
Indiana scores on an inbound, and if Billis and Seth and Shulman don't rip his you know what I mean?
You know what?
And that ain't not Izzo.
I'm going to tell him you said that so that he can have some of the pressure on that I got, except he doesn't make the money.
Right. Yeah, I got about four of your next games. I swear to God, at Illinois, scores on an inbound, I'll kill him. I'll crush him.
But let me tell you, there's a team right now that worries you.
Yes.
I mean, because of that style, you know what? It's kind of the different style, but it's kind of like the Syracuse, you know. I mean, it's a completely the way they're trapping and pressing and all over, you know, un Big Ten-ish. Like, in fact, there's not many teams in the country that are playing like that, but they're playing better, and there's going to be some better games. You know, I still think Iowa is pretty good, and I think Minnesota's getting healthier. It's going to be interesting to see what the league does. I mean, Michigan and Purdue, I think, are, you know, really good. And Maryland, a little young on the perimeter, you know. Other than that, I got some talent, too, and a good team. So it'll be interesting to see. I wish I could see more of other leagues that you guys get to kind of figure out where we are compared to where other leagues are. I see them on TV. I don't see them in person.
Grass League is good, man. I'll tell you, the only thing with Maryland, they just pitch it away. I mean, they make the most foolish turnovers of any team. They just turn it over.
Wisconsin seems to be playing better, too, as the
Predators. I didn't even mention them. I mean, they had an injury or two. They get down a little bit, and yet I think Greg's done a great job with that team. Happ is just there's another different animal, you know, just a different style. So when you prep for these teams, you're prepping for a lot of different things. And, I mean, I've never seen anybody run an offense like Purdue does. Those guys are coming off those pin downs and that at warp speed, you know. And so it's been kind of cool. And yet we're still – one thing hasn't changed since Bob Knight started and Gene Cady till now is 90% of these arenas are packed every night, and it makes it a difficult – job to win on the road. Probably, if I feel best about one thing, I don't know where we're 4-1 or 5-1 on the road, 5-1 on the road in conference play, and that's probably the best thing that's happened to us.
Well, Coach, I know game day's coming down there this weekend. You know, Jay Will and Coach Greenberg and Billis, they've got expensive palettes, so I don't know whether they're going to take care of them on Friday night.
Yeah, I'm going to take care of them. All right. We're going to have some pasties at my house Friday night. Pasties and beer for Seth, and I don't know what for the rest of them. But, yeah, we're looking forward to it. Danny, I'm looking forward to seeing you down the road. And hopefully, you know, Kyle is, I'd say, 50-50 for this week and maybe 60-40. He practiced a little bit yesterday. If he can play, that helps us. If not, we're going to have to find a way to win and move forward. But the league's going to be good. It should be great for all you guys because I think the Big Ten, exciting places to go. And hopefully we'll have some fun.
You're the best.
That's illegal to do.
You can't have fun.
You guys, no, you're not allowed to have fun.
I had fun the other day on a broadcast. Got 5 emails from administrators. It's like, geez. You can't have fun anymore. You got to be serious and wrap yourself in saran wrap, Coach.
No. Hey, don't get me started. Don't expose the text message I send you while I'm watching game.
Appreciate you.
You know what? You are right, though. It's hard to have fun, and boy, everybody takes things so personal. Hopefully the three of us will change the world.
There you go. And we just thanks, boss.
All right, guys.
All right, great conversation with Coach Izzo. Let's make some picks. And Coach Izzo talked about the Big Ten and two teams in particular, Maryland and Wisconsin. They're going to go at it on one of those unique Friday night games in the Big Ten. And Seth, why don't I start with you? Maryland and Wisconsin, part of that middle tier of the Big Ten, two teams trying to get up to that top tier. Who are you picking?
You know, I'm really concerned with Maryland's inability to throw the ball to the guy wearing the Maryland uniform. That's never a good thing. I mean, like, when you throw it to the guy wearing the other uniform, it just makes life miserable. And one thing Wisconsin doesn't do is they will not throw it to the guy wearing the Maryland uniform. And for that reason only, and I think at times Maryland gets impatient offensively and defensively. When they get impatient defensively, they break down. I'm going to go with Wisconsin.
To me, Wisconsin has found Wisconsin. If coaches that listen to this podcast, if you want to know how to play defense against the high post John Beilein or the high post system, go to the Michigan-Wisconsin game and watch Nate Reavers just completely shut Michigan down in the second half. It was remarkable. It really was. And that's where Wisconsin is playing well. I don't trust Maryland. I want to trust Maryland, but I don't trust Maryland. I trust Wisconsin more. Wisconsin's shooting good numbers, you know, but I don't know that they're a great three-point shooting team, although the numbers say they're very good, and they complement it, obviously, with Ethan Happ. I'm taking Wisconsin, but it's going to be interesting. Happ against Bruno Fernando. Bruno Fernando is got to be, I don't know the NBA, but he's got to be moving up charts because he's not as stiff. He's athletic, plays with an incredible enthusiasm. But on Wisconsin, baby, because I just think that the guy Nate Reavers is playing defense at a level inside that we haven't seen in a long time.
And it's at the Kohl Center, which will give Wisconsin hard an advantage.
Win. Yep. And Friday place. Night, let's be honest, everybody's hammered by three
that
in
place
Wisconsin.
Is gonna be rocking.
It's a mess.
Even though I did hear reports because of the cold weather, they're actually having a hard time delivering beer in Wisconsin, that they're actually having to cancel some deliveries, which to me is like, that's when panic sets in. Forget about all the bread and water and everything else. When you can't deliver beer in Wisconsin, it's time to start sounding the alarm bells.
True story. When Wisconsin played here a couple years ago in the Big Ten championship game, it might have been Wisconsin again. I can't remember who was against. I'm being literal here. They drank downtown Indy out of beer. They came in so early. They drank. I have two beer friends that own beer distributorships, and like Dan, they drank us out of beer.
They had to make emergency calls.
They won.
call the National Guard.
Yeah. All right. Spotted cow. Let's go.
ACC Virginia Tech at NC State on Saturday. Another one of those games, Doc, where the home court seems to be giving the Wolfpack a little bit of an advantage this year.
Yeah, and that's the only reason I'm picking them. I think Virginia Tech can score, as Seth said. I think Virginia Tech is a team that is going to be interesting down the stretch. But there, Seth mentioned a guy, Kevin Keats. Not a lot of people know Kevin Keats. Kevin Keats, when he coached at Hargrave Prep School, was a place that everybody wanted to get players from. And then he was at Louisville with Rick Pitino. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but when everything came out on Louisville, guess who was never mentioned not one single time? And anybody knows Kevin Keats knows that, yes, he got out of there a year before and all that kind of stuff, but he would never be involved. Kevin Keats is one of the best people, the best coaches coaching college basketball. That's not to say Buzz Williams isn't. He's a good dude. But when you're at home and you're North Carolina State and I think you're playing better, I'm taking them. But don't be surprised if Virginia Tech doesn't make a run here.
You're right about KT. I mean, Kevin was at Hargrave when I was at Virginia Tech. We had a ton of players that played for him that played for us. And, like, this team he has this year, Dan, I thought it was interesting. Before the season, he had nine new players. And, he was moaning about having nine new players. I said, you had nine new players every single year at Hargrave.
Right.
I said,
right.
No one is more ready to take this team and be ready and play well early in the season than you are, because – that's what you've always done. He goes, you know what? I didn't think about that way. I said, well, you should. And guys want to play for him. Guys enjoy playing for him. Guys compete for him. And he can really coach. And they play freed up, aggressive, confident, and hard. It's a game he has to win at home. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain games.
That's a nasty fan base.
Yeah, and oh my God, the worst. And like that's one of the few places in the ACC where behind your bench are students, and they do that little Wolfpack thing.
Except the
middle finger comes up.
Yeah,
and they literally they're behind your bench cursing at you for the whole game. It's the craziest thing, and your players and everything else. They literally sit right behind your bench.
So you gonna make a pick?
I said, you're not listening.
I didn't hear it over the cough.
We
all I heard was a cough. I didn't hear the pick. Did you cough it up? Did you cough up NC State?
Six packs a day is coming back on them.
All right, so if Kevin Keats will probably get some consideration for ACC Coach of the Year, but I think right now you got to give it to Chris Mack and the job he's doing at Louisville. Ooh. North Carolina and Louisville, 2 o'clock on ESPN Saturday, Seth. Does Chris Mack keep this train going for the Cardinals?
No, I think Carolina's playing at a different level now. I think this is a revenge game for Carolina. I think Carolina's playing more unselfishly. The ball's moving better. I think they're defending better. They're getting they're playing small more, which is fine. And I think they roll into the Yum, and they go with a little barbecue on the barbecue wings on the Cards. I think Carolina wins this game.
I think Carolina wins this game only because I think these are the games Roy Williams wins, and I'm not sure exactly why. I just know that history says that he does. But a word about the job done at Louisville. You know what? I had him earlier, and they beat Michigan State, and you could see Seth, the connection between Chris Mack and his team is one thing, but even early there was a connection between Chris Mack and Louisville, the city, the town, the fans that were there. And obviously you can tell it after a win, certainly a good win, over a then full strength, I guess, without McQuaid, Michigan State team. But Chris Mack can coach. Chris Mack has a team that whether you know their guys, Jordan Warwick can score it and all that kind of stuff. The kid Cunningham's been a really good addition as a fifth-year guy. But this team plays. But I'll give you a pick. How about North Carolina? And I'll shut up.
All right. So despite all of that stuff, despite
great discipline right there. Great discipline.
Quickly on this one, Texas Tech and Kansas, 4 o'clock on Saturday. What do you think here, Coach?
I'm going Texas Tech. Guns up. I'll tell you what. There's something wrong with Kansas right now.
Mm-hmm. They've lost 3 out of 4.
All right. They're just not a good team. And a little bit of concern because, you know, how you beat Kansas is you absolutely crush them on the glass and you crush them in the paint. I think that Texas Tech will get in the paint on the dribble, and I think they'll offensive rebound. And I just don't think Kansas is that good a team right now.
I'm going to say, honest to goodness, for the same reason I said Carolina over Louisville, I'm taking Kansas. I just think we've seen it so many times when the chips are down with programs like that, all of a sudden they rise up. Give me Kansas.
All right, Doc, it's you're heading to Gainesville. You got Florida and Kentucky over the weekend. Coach, you're at the Harvard on the Hackensack, the alma mater, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to roll in there. I took a picture of Harvard on the Hackensack yesterday, a little picture of the Hackensack River. I know a lot of people are...
Shut up with that Harvard. Hey, let me tell you what happens at his school. You drive up, you pull up, somebody runs up to your car and says, what degree would you like? You say, I'll take communications. They give you a communications degree. You give them $10, you run on. Stop with the Harvard on the Hackensack.
You're lucky if they let you keep your car to drive
right.
off on.
Right. You got no hubcaps.
Hey, I'll give you a good one. I spoke to the communications department yesterday.
Yeah.
Class. All right, you love this. So the guy asked me, goes, well, you know, how did you decide to get into communications and to television? I said, I got fired.
Hey, Seth, people ask me all the time, hey, Dan, how did you land this job, you know, a radio job? I said, well, I got fired as a head coach in Indiana. All you got to do is be fired as a head coach in Indiana. You'll get a radio gig local. Yeah, that's how we get into it. It's the best.
No question about it. Radio, TV, being fired at Indiana is the best thing that happened to some head coaches out there.
Me.
Harvard on the Hackensack, baby. I'll tell you what, it'd be big. Hey, we're going to do a big number today. LIU, my dad's alma mater. If you go online, I posted a bunch of pictures of old Ralph Greenberg hooping it up at LIU. And we're going to go and do a little trip down memory lane.
I probably
should get a picture of Dockage in his Indiana uniform in this thing because I know one thing.
Yeah.
If Dan does a game and it's, you know, in Indiana's involved. There's always a picture of him in uniform.
Yeah, well, it's going to be in those stripe warm-ups.
Let me tell you something.
Those things on for most of the game.
They still talk about me. Here, no jock strap and short shorts. It was magic back in the day, boys.
All right, we got to go. Thanks
Goodbye.
For listening, everybody. Don't forget, subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. We'll see y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.